All right, this is Jace from the Comic Source. I'm here with not only one of my favorite comic writers, but one of my favorite people in the world, Josh Dysart.
I love that.
How you doing, Josh?
I'm good, man. It's good to see you again.
It is always so good to see you. I'm great, man. No complaints.
Awesome.
As I told you before we started recording, we're going to start off talking little comics, but then we're going to get deep.
Yeah.
We're going to get deep.
So all right, I'll try.
Let's try. Let's talk a little bit about the current book you have coming out from Valiant Imperium.
Okay.
Very well written, as I've come to expect from you, but also layered. I feel like very much so, maybe more than any comic I read on a regular basis, Imperium is really, in a way, a commentary on the world outside our window, which is something Valiant has always strived for at a company.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, once the book shifted, or once my work at Valiant shifted onto Harada entirely, Harada was always designed to force questions in story form about the conflict between democracy and free will, dictatorships, you know, all these various isms, how we govern ourselves. Harada always brought these questions up. So when the book focused on him, that became a really, really strong theme in the work itself. So it was inevitable that the book become like political in that sense, because Harada is a political villain. Like, just the need to impose his will, his vision, and the complexity of that vision, that automatically makes the material political in an interesting way. So, yeah.
Well, I know early on, especially in the Valiant fans community, there was talk about Harada as a character in the Harbinger book. Was he the main character? Is he a supporting character? Clearly in Imperium, he's the guy.
Yeah.
And it's about exploring that gray area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, is he the main character? I mean, I feel like in Harbinger, I do feel that the kids are the main characters. But both books really play with the idea of who the protagonist of the book is. So in that sense, the books really are about ideas, you know, as opposed to being about a certain character.
Right.
Because even Imperium, which places Harada at its center, constantly changes perspectives and viewpoints. And, like, sometimes you're with the enemies and they really make you feel like Harada's a real danger. And then sometimes you're with Harada and his people and it really makes you feel like he's the right man for the moment. And so at that point, yeah, it has to be about ideas and it has to be about the conflict of those ideas for all those different points of view to work and for all the things we want to achieve to, you know, be achieved. Comics provides a very small amount of space, actually, to communicate an idea, so which is why my comics are super dense. So we have to play with that as much as possible by changing perspective.
But that's true to life, right? I mean,
I think that's
what you strive for. I mean, none of us are 100% good all the time.
Yeah.
None of us are, you know, even the worst jerk you know still has redeeming qualities, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I'm not the first to play with this whole idea that no one perceives themselves as the villain. I mean, it's kind of a common thing in comics, and it's a smart thing to do. I just wanted to take it to a real extreme with us. And hopefully I didn't break the villain. Like, there's some fear when you're telling these kind of stories that to break the villain is to make it so where when your heroes fight the guy, you question your heroes, you know? And that's problematic for a shared universe superhero book. But I think there's room for a character like Harada, who, a character that forces you to question every action that everyone does against him and for him. I think there's room in like the superhero storytelling canon for that kind of thing.
When you start playing in those gray areas, right, that's what makes for compelling stories,
yeah.
Right? Because it makes you stop and question what you yourself believe, what you yourself think of as right and wrong. It's playing in that gray area that makes for a compelling story.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, it certainly compels me as a reader, so then that's how it makes it into my own work, right? I hope so. I think that, you know, we often call it a villain book, but it's not really about that at all. It's about the very question of what is right, what is wrong, what is self-rule, what what is, you know, does democracy work? Does it take a dictator? Like, what are we, what really does it mean for humanity to govern itself, you know? And then you'd throw a bunch of robots and, like, aliens in the mix. And you got a comic book, you know?
So it makes it compelling, but at the same time, I feel like you're commenting on the society we live in today. It's social commentary as compelling stories, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm mostly, you know, I'm very much, everybody's influenced by different things, and I very much am influenced by the world. I'm not a big escapist by nature. I'm really engaged in people. I love people, even when they're being assholes. I think they're really fascinating. Even if we're killing ourselves, we're amazing, I think, in an interesting way. And so, because that's my center of inspiration, it makes it into the stories, you know, pretty effortlessly. Like, I don't have to think about it too much. I just have to justify it after I've told the story. But that's my primary influence, you know? And some people have, you know, that's just, that's where I'm getting all of my juice from to create, yeah.
That's interesting to hear you say that. So it's not even about, I mean, you're not sitting back as a storyteller. You know, you get your experiences, your ideas for stories through the life you live and from viewing the world outside. But it's not even so much you putting your morality on them. It's just you, from what I hear you saying, is you're kind of sitting back as, and try to be as impartial as possible.
Yes.
And just, okay, what is this that I see? How can I use that to tell an interesting story and examine us as a species?
Yes, yes. And I think that, you know, a lot of it happens without thought, too. Like, it's not that I didn't mean to make this story so political. It's
right.
Just, that's what came out. That's the work that came out. And, But directly to your question, I mean, yeah, that's just what I'm inspired by. So it ends up in the work, and I like, honestly, villainy is boring. You know,
the twirling mustache.
Yeah, yeah, that's boring, and I think people are really interesting. So I want my characters to be interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, to understand their motivations. Okay, it's one thing for them to do something bad. Like you said, that's boring.
Yeah.
He's conquering a nation because, you know, Doomish.
Yes,
because
yes,
he
yes.
wants to sit on a big throne and rule over everybody.
Yeah.
That's not interesting. The interesting part is why.
Yes, precisely. Yeah.
Why does he want to do that? What drives him?
Yeah.
Or her?
Yeah, and human motivation is fascinating in life, you know, and hopefully in storytelling. But you had, the previous question was about, it was about something about viewing everybody's point of view. I don't think I locked onto it, but there was something really good there that I missed out on. That
just about how take two people raised by the same parents in the same environment. You know, throw out the whole nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
And they can be unique and have different motivations and end up in different places.
Right, yes, yes, yeah, yeah. Yes, and also, yeah, exactly. And you were talking previously about also not sort of like forcing your agenda. Like, my
right.
point of this is not to say democracy is great.
Right.
Or benevolent dictatorship is great. Right. The point is to labor the ideas of both, like, through these characters. And it's, you know, and that's a craft to make sure that's entertaining and not just professorial or preachy or some shit. And to make that really engaging so that the reader walks away without any answers whatsoever, just more confused than ever. Like, that's ultimately my intention with my characters, is to really confuse the subject.
but that's what I find great about your work. It's not about the answers. There's something so much, I mean, because it's one thing, like, 2 + 2 = 4, we all know that.
Yeah.
I mean, what worth do you get from that answer?
Yeah.
There's something worth, I mean, it's one thing to ask a question, and it has a specific black and white answer, and that's the only answer to that question.
Yeah.
But there's something worthwhile in asking a question, and you don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Because it's about the search, and in that search, we as human, that's how we discover
yes.
who we are. And I can go ask guy A a question and he could give me an answer, and I could go ask man B the exact same question and he's going to give me a different answer. And the differences in those answers, the reason they have different answers, that's what's compelling. That's what's interesting. That's what makes you want to understand, okay, where's each of these guys coming
from? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, especially when you ask a really big question, any work that asks a big question and then presupposes to answer it is ultimately going to be like it's just going to feel like a dishonest work. The question's too big to be answered, which is why a lot of mainstream entertainment asks very small, simple questions so that they can answer them in big ways. So we're sort of reverse engineering it, right? We ask this big, complex question and then we don't answer it, and we hope that somehow that's commercial entertainment. That's where the aliens and the robots come in, you know?
Well, honestly, as much as I love comics, they have gotten pricey these days. Mm. And so it is a matter of value. And as I've gotten older, I feel like I want to read the comics that give me the most value. And in that way, I want comics to make me think.
There's
still something to be said for going and reading a great Superman adventure and it's fun, whatever. You know, it's the...
And like big open pages and three panels a page. I love that stuff. Exactly. I wish I could write that.
But it's black and white, you know? And at the end of the day, when I'm driving in the car, those aren't the comics that I'm... find myself thinking back to. They're not the questions that I wonder about, like, okay, where are we going as a species? And it seems kind of strange to think of comics, you know, coming from this place of, you know, being mindless entertainment, 10 cents a piece, entertaining kids, to this place where you can use it as a way to affect change or to examine where we are as a species.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so recently, you were involved with the World Food Program.
Yes.
You got a chance to go and see that firsthand. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Let our listeners know what that was all about.
Yeah, so in December 2014, I traveled with the United Nations World Food Program convoy across northern Iraq. And spent, you know, and interviewed many refugees who are fleeing, refugees and IDPs who are fleeing either the Syrian conflict or Daesh or ISIS in Iraq. And it was a really, really incredible trip. And now there's a free comic book that you can read, which will more succinctly give you my thoughts on it than we can here in this interview. And it's called Living Level 3 Iraq. If you Google Josh Sysart, and it's free on the internet. It's 35 pages. It won't take you long to read. But that's what I did. And I wanted to get back to that kind of work because I missed something that Unknown Soldier gave me back in the day when I worked on a book about East African politics. So I've been struggling to get another gig going that would allow me to go someplace real and then come back with something relatively, you know, hopefully real and genuine to say. Because that's when I'm happiest as a creative person.
Why do you feel like that matters? Like, not just for you, but for us as a society. I mean, the world's gotten so smaller with the internet and technology.
Yes.
The way. Why does it matter for you to tell stories like that? And not just for you personally, but us as humanity. Why do you think getting those kind of stories out matters?
Yeah. Well, I do want to say, you know, almost all stories matter, you know, whether it's escapist entertainment or whether it's something else. They all play a role in how we interact with one another and the conversation we're having with one another. That's what stories are. But I personally think that when there is an underrepresented voice and they're experiencing something that we need to know about, because collectively we need to prove, you know, I think humanity is collectively more good than bad, and we have to respond to it, and that voice is underrepresented, then telling their story becomes incredibly important, not so much to the audience, but as to the person whose story is being told. The World Food Program provides sustenance to 80 million people across the planet who are in situations where they have no food security. And that's a, you know, that's a type of keeping them alive. I don't understand why it's not equally important that storytellers mobilize in a similar way to tell the stories of those people, because having your story told means you're part of the human conversation, and that's also a form of sustenance. So, for instance, these Yazidi who in mid-2014 were trapped on Mount Sinjar after thousands were slaughtered by ISIS, they needed to eat first, but they also needed to have their story told, because that's how you address this situation.
That's how you feel like you matter.
Right, yeah.
You have
like
a voice.
Somebody's story is there, and I remember interviewing people, and they were saying, like, we thought that nobody even knew we were on the mountain until the food started to drop. You know, like the airplanes flying right over, and they're like, holy shit, somebody knows we're here. Like, we're not, it's not over yet. And I think that having your story told is that exact same feeling that they had when food started to drop. It's like, oh my gosh, somebody knows we're here. You know, this is good. This can help. So you tell the story more for the person whose story it is than you do for the audience. And you hope that the audience wants to read it. And that's where you learn the craft of making it entertaining, you know. I mean, that's almost a grotesque word to use when you're talking about refugees fleeing ISIS. But
right.
Nonetheless, I feel confident that I can communicate to you what some people are going through in the world in a way that you'll want to engage with, that won't, you know, by making it, crafting it into a more entertaining piece. And hopefully not at the cost of, like, reducing it down or making it oversimplified or something.
Right. Well, it's easy. I mean, with everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to overlook things. It's easy to get cynical. And, you know, it's a comic. And like I said, you know, comics traditionally, entertainment,
yeah,
funny business, you know, whatever. And so why do they matter? But from hearing you talk, it reminds me of that theory that the best way to judge a society and somebody as a species is to look at their fiction.
Yeah.
Look at the tales they're telling.
Yes, yeah.
And that can give you perspective on what they care about,
yeah,
and what
who they wanted to be, maybe
right,
not who they were. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if we pull back from all the deep layers, uh-huh, and bring it back to Valiant and Imperium, what's next for Toyo Harada in Imperium? Where does he go from here with the end of the last story arc? He kind of woke up and saw that there was big happenings that he wasn't necessarily a part of.
Right, right.
So
yeah,
where does
excellent.
He,
that's a great way.
Where
to
does he go from here?
So the next story arc has started, Stormbreak, and it's going to be told mostly from the point of view of people trying to oppose Harada. And I feel like there's this sense of two things happening. Harada is ultimately losing. He may keep winning these small skirmishes, but when we talk about what's really important is not the alien Vine managing to get a small army on the bush. It's not, what's really important is that he's broke, is that he's absorbing human beings in his community at an alarming rate. We continue to call it a post-scarcity society, but in fact, scarcity is the order of the day. He's failing at his mission, and he's losing the resource conflict rapidly. Combined with that is a separation across the planet between people who believe in his ideas, the way he's presenting them, and those who don't. And those tend to break down along economic lines. So we're pretty much at the brink of everything collapsing. So I can't tell you what happens in the next story. I haven't been given the go-ahead
right.
from up top.
Fair enough.
All I have to say is that the world is very close to a schism so vast it could cause a global conflict, like a unified global conflict. And Harada's at a point where he can really no longer sustain this attempt, his third attempt, by the way, taking over the planet. He's starting to see the failure of this particular attempt.
So maybe his reach, once again, has exceeded his grasp.
Yes, yes.
All right,
or maybe. He's just a genius.
Or maybe.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to end this with A question I've actually wanted to ask you for a long time. I've been waiting for the right moment, and I'm glad I'm going to get this recorded, because I feel like even more so than the first iteration of Valiant, you have such a grasp on Toyo Harada.
Yeah.
So let's see where you go with this. You yourself,
yes,
as socially conscious as you are,
wow,
you have Toyo Harada's powers.
Yeah.
What do you do with them?
Fascinating.
I'll give you a 1 hour time on
this. I know, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is super interesting. I think some of, though not all, of the reason why I have had so much fun writing Toyo Harada is because I ask myself this question all the time, and I get different answers every time.
Depending on your mood?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I fear, particularly had I acquired it from a young age, I would not have had the character building experiences and honestly the like kind of like death of ego humbling, like where you think you're something but you're nothing,
right?
And you learn it and it hurts, like I wouldn't have had those experiences, and I might be a really selfish person with those powers,
right?
I don't know how. I think the reason why Superman is such an, I actually like the character. A lot of people call him boring or whatever. I think Morrison proved relatively recently that a great writer can tell a great Superman story. What's interesting about Superman is that he grew up and he is a force of like ethical good. I don't know how you don't become Toyo Harada without the powers. That's my, maybe it's a failure of my vision.
It's not, I agree. And it's what I love about it. It's not his powers that make him Superman.
Yeah.
That he has the powers and he is
his so true selfless. Power is his ethical compass.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas Harada is like a product of having all that power from a young age, going through a pretty traumatic event, and then kind of owning everything around him, like forever.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like,
why not?
Mutable reality. I mean, you know.
And to me, that is one of the most interesting things about Harada as a character. I can relate. I can't relate to having that near omnipotence of power, but I can relate to the fact that he's flawed. You know, he's still human on some level. He's flawed.
Yeah.
I'm human on some level. I'm flawed.
Yeah.
I can't blame him for anything.
Yeah.
He does, because I can't, you know, I put myself in that situation.
Yeah. I do think that, like, if I were to acquire the powers now, with the experiences I've had that have helped me build whatever character I have, I think that I'd still make a lot of mistakes, but there are certain Harada flaws that I would not have, and that is, like, I would. His dictatorial nature. That's it. That's really, I think, where he and I are separate, and that's the part that I write from a fully fictional place. Is he just, I don't know even why, he just has a need to be in charge. It's not so much that he wants people to know, like, he didn't want to be famous. He doesn't want to be, if the world is perfect, he doesn't want to be, like, praised as a god. But he also doesn't really give a fuck what you think. He like never questions himself. That's really what it is.
Yeah, that's what it's. He's so convinced he's right all the time. He never allows for the fact that he could be making a mistake.
Yes,
he's
right.
He's totally convinced in his beliefs.
He just has the ultimate privilege because he's been in this bubble where he's been able to control reality most of his life, all of his adult life. And so there's no, you know, it's like all, you know, like any kind of privilege. Like if you're wealthy or you're part of an ethnic group that's kind of been dominant over other ethnic groups, like there's a lot of blind spots you have.
That's exactly where I was thinking. Yeah. It gives you that blind spot.
Yeah, and that's Harada,
you don't have that realization.
Yeah,
you could be wrong.
Yeah, you could be. It's so important for us. That's one of the great first lessons. Children are narcissists up until the moment they realize, oh, I actually, like, I could be wrong about something.
I am not the center of the universe.
Yeah, and you just become a little bit of a better person every time you admit you could be wrong about a thing. He's never done that.
Yeah, my 4-year-old daughter has yet to learn that lesson.
Yeah.
Your daughter has learned it, or she's...
Well, they're... I have a 25-year-old and an 18-year-old. They're going through a lot of...
Oh,
yeah, they've been... life like hammered them, and now they're back. And but yeah, so in a way, like, Harada is so evolved in many, many ways. Intellectually, I mean, it's hard to write someone smarter than you, but I did my best. But but in that sense, like in the ego sense, he's literally has the ego of like a 6-month-year-old child. It's like such a narcissistic, psychopathic, like,
he's
inclination.
He's never gonna change. Because the fall of the Harbinger, he was still
Yeah, right, he was that's still the thing. There. That's the sort of what I love about him is that then he does have an experience that should be humbling, should give him a little bit of a death of ego, all those things that have made us like into the people, whoever we are, and he just like, yeah, it's too late.
He missed the point.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, I guess the point is I need to try harder.
That's right.
Be bigger. You know, it's like, well, you know, I love him, man. It's fun to work with. I equally love, I miss the Renegade kids because I also loved writing characters who all they did was question themselves.
Right.
That also was really beautiful and almost more human, like all the doubt and all the, like, you know, and the self-delusion. Yeah, and they're
especially
like,
being they were at that age, you know, high school age kids,
yeah.
Where, I mean, I don't know how you were when I was in high school.
Oh, it's like a nightmare.
Yeah, I hate it. I mean, I hear people say, oh, I love high school, I'd go back in a second. No way!
Horrible. I was a terrible person.
Exactly, four years of self-doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Questioning, why did I say that to her?
Yes. Yeah, man, and exactly. And hopefully we got, like, some of that, I don't know, but I miss trying to put that in those characters. Yeah. So, Harada gives you something really beautiful. And then, you know, it's interesting, and this is why there's such a tonal shift between Harbinger and Imperium, is those kids really sort of ground Imperium in a very humanist thing. Team Imperium is an amalgamation of very high intellectual struggles. Like, you know, Mech Major is a character as exercise in identity struggle and what is intelligence and like all these questions. And you know, Gravedog is what does it mean to be in control of your own destiny, and you know, each one has their own thing, except for maybe Angela, who's like pure, just sort of evil, like the closest thing to evil we really have. I think that it's fun to write it, but they're all so aloof, man. They're all like these high, like, thinking entities in this big job, and the kids were always like, do we just fuck about and like throw a party, or do we like save the world? I don't know.
Yeah.
Team Imperium would never sound good. Yeah. Team Imperium would never be like, let's get drunk. You know, like maybe one of them would, but so totally it really changed the books a lot without me having to do anything. It's just sort of how it worked out.
Any chance we're going to see those Renegades come back in the future?
Well, certainly. I mean, obviously, whether I'm writing them or not is I don't know. But, I mean, I think it would be crazy for Valiant not to bring the Renegades back. You know, they're good. They should. I love to have seen them, you know, by now. I would have loved to have worked on them, but I'm kind of a slower writer. I don't have a lot of space to work. I think Valiant would have totally let me do that if we had the space for it. But, I mean, it's only a matter of time. They're just too cool. You know, they're all too cool.
So do you feel like, being that you're the one that really put your stamp on Harada in this new Valiant universe and through Harbinger now into Imperium, is there going to come a point, do you think, when you're ready to put him away and move on to something else? Or
yes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, I've been telling some form of this story since 2011, and that's a long time, and it's super satisfying to do a long form story like this, but there's also a strong desire to try something new and fresh, and you get locked into story decisions and like a voice that you maybe, you know, you've kind of grown out of, but Now it's like really part of the DNA of what you're working with. So I think a break is in order. But I also feel really close to Valiant. They really helped me out at a time when nobody was giving me work. And when Warren, to take Unknown Soldier and say, oh, this kid should write superhero comics, is a crazy leap. So I really kind of will always owe that to Warren, to have that vision. So if I do take a break, it'll be like taking a break from family. So they'll, you know, you always come back to family. So yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter what company it's at. If you're writing it, I'm reading it.
Nice, so. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for taking the time, Josh.
Yeah, thanks
for Hope we didn't get too deep for you listeners.
No, I'm sure I just rambled. That's probably what happened.
And if you're not reading Imperium, you need to get out there and pick it up. Super compelling book. It's going to make you think. Definitely great value for your comic dollar.
Awesome. Thanks. And read Living Level 3 Iraq.
Yes, Living Level 3 Iraq.
It's free. It's worth the price.
Google, what, Josh Dysart World Food Program? It's probably going to pop
yeah,
up.
Yeah, sure, totally. Or the title, Living Level 3.
Living Level 3 Iraq.
And there's four chapters. Each chapter is like 6 to 10 pages.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Josh.
Awesome.